This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Cholera is spreading in Somalia, further complicating drought relief efforts as the country teeters on famine. Health officials are complaining about a lack of access to some areas due to security challenges.
That's Mohammed Yusuf reporting from Nairobi. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, the Red Cross says African countries are failing their internally displaced people. The number of migrants crossing the central Mediterranean to Europe could surpass 200,000 this year. And the Earth is losing some of its prime freshwater resources that lie deep under the ground. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the Red Cross says African countries are failing their internally displaced people. Reversing that trend was the subject of a high-level meeting of the International Red Cross and the African Union that wrapped up today in Zimbabwe. Sebastian Mofu has the story for VOA.
Africa has about 13 million internally displaced people, a third of the global number of IDPs, and more than double the amount of refugees on the continent. A refugee has fled across a national border, while an IDP has also fled their home but stayed within their own country. African Union Commission Head of Humanitarian Affairs, Refugees and Displaced People, Olabis Dare, says the situation of IDPs in Africa is very critical, dire, and worsening.
The issues that are generating internal displacement, multiplying and deepening by the day. One of the key things is that some situations are protracted situations. We are talking about displacement in countries like Sudan, Somalia, Democratic Republic, for some time, as a result of dwindling conflict, internal conflicts on the continent, the numbers went down. But again, it went up because of new situations. And here we are talking about Boko Haram situation and the Malian situation.
Dare spoke to VOA on the sidelines of this week's meeting in Zimbabwe to look at how African nations can better implement the Kampala Convention. Created in 2009, the AU Convention binds governments to protect the rights and well-being of IDPs forced to flee their homes by conflict, violence, disasters, and human rights abuses. Just 25 of the 55 AU member states have signed and ratified the convention. Some other countries, like Kenya, that are not signatories, have their own IDP laws. But in a report this week, the International Committee of the Red Cross says African countries are coming up short on those commitments. The ICRC presented 25 recommendations for improvements, including dialogue with IDP communities to ensure their meaningful participation in elections and other decision-making. ICRC Global IDP Advisor Angela Cotroneo played a key role in the recent research and consultation with the African Union.
Internally displaced persons in situations of armed conflict are often among the most vulnerable civilians. The ICC is present in Africa in many countries, and we work on behalf of persons affected by armed conflict and other violence. And we also experience every day the difficult situations of IDPs. Very often they lack access to essential services such as healthcare, education, employment. They sometimes continue to be concerned about their safety and security.
She said governments need to seek out input from vulnerable groups to ensure their needs are met. The experts agree African countries must also address the root causes of internal displacement, which is in most cases armed conflict. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
If the current trend continues, the number of migrants crossing the central Mediterranean to Europe will surpass 200,000 this year. It would be the first time the figure has been that high on the route and would be about 20,000 more than last year's total. The International Organization for Migration says so far this year, more than 29,000 migrants and refugees have arrived in Europe. The vast majority are in Italy. More than 3,800 have arrived in Greece and about 1,000 in Spain. At least 663 migrants and refugees have died trying to cross the Mediterranean this year. The World Health Organization says it has no evidence that four of its workers were kidnapped in southern Somalia by suspected al-Shabaab militants. It says the abducted men were apparently hired by local authorities for polio vaccination campaigns. The commander of the Somali army in the town of Luuk says the workers were in their homes Sunday when gunmen broke in and took them to a remote area. He says the army is pursuing the kidnappers. The missing men, two aid workers and two drivers, are all Somali nationals. Before the kidnapping, the aid workers had received death threats indicating that al-Shabaab objected to their work. The al-Qaeda-linked group has not allowed polio vaccination programs in districts it controls. Meanwhile, cholera is spreading in Somalia, further complicating drought relief efforts as the country teeters on famine. As Mohammed Yusuf reports, health officials are complaining about a lack of access to some areas due to security challenges.
Health workers say at least 300 new cases and dozens of deaths are reported each day. World Health Organization cholera expert Abdinasser Abubakar says the situation may worsen in a few weeks.
I think it's good people to understand also this time of the year is not the cholera season for Somalia. The actual cholera season will start during the rainy season, which is probably in a few weeks' time. So we describe this as the off-season. And we are expecting in a few weeks' time when the rain comes, probably the trend of the cholera will probably even double or triple.
The health agency says about 5.5 million people in Somalia are at risk of contracting waterborne diseases like cholera. The drought affecting most of eastern Africa has made the situation worse, leaving many Somalis without access to clean water and food. According to medical aid agencies, more than 25,000 people were affected with cholera in the past 3 months. At least 450 have died. Health Ministry official Isaac Mursal says it is difficult to control the disease and the new cases are interfering with their daily operations. He says it is challenging to distribute medicines to 2 or 5 villages for a day and then get new cholera cases in 10 villages. He says sometimes medicines that was meant for one village is distributed to 4 or 5 villages. Abubakar says medics are finding it hard to access some areas due to insecurity.
We are struggling and we are trying to do what we can do, but what's hampering the control of outbreak is access. You know, many of the locations in Somalia is inaccessible and we are finding very difficult to do the control measures.
Aid agencies are getting access to central Somalia and other parts of the country except for southern regions where al-Shabaab is in control. In those regions, there have been 950 cases of cholera and 80 deaths since the beginning of the year. More than 6 million Somalis, half the population, need food, water and medical assistance. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Well, the Earth is losing some of its prime freshwater resources, but these are not lakes or rivers. They're known as aquifers and are found deep underground. Some are so deep that even very heavy rains cannot seep down and replenish them. Many aquifers are used to irrigate crops, not only for domestic consumption, but for international consumption as well. A new study warns these water deposits are being depleted and could affect food security and economies around the world. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Wheat, rice, sugar, cotton, and maize are among the most important traded crops. Many producing countries rely on irrigation to grow them. In fact, irrigated agriculture accounts for about 80% or more of global freshwater use. A growing proportion of that comes from underground aquifers because of such things as droughts or growing crops in arid areas. Researchers say sucking water from these aquifers is creating a big problem that's not getting much attention. Even if it did, scientists say, there's not much that can be done about it. The study was conducted by the University College London and NASA's Goddard Institute of Space Studies in New York. It says 11% of what's called disappearing groundwater from aquifers is used to grow internationally traded food. Michael Puma is a research scientist at NASA and Columbia University.
Groundwater is quite difficult to observe because it's just so deep in the ground. So it's difficult to observe and know how much is there and where the water is.
The aquifers formed in underground spaces as the geologic history of the Earth was written.
For this study, we're really interested in deep formations or deep aquifers where people are pumping up water that is not replenished when you have major rain events.
He says these aquifers may not be replenished for hundreds of years.
For it to be replenished, you'd have to have a major shift in the climate. It'd be much wetter in these regions that are currently very dry.
The U.S., India, Iran, Pakistan, China, Mexico, and Saudi Arabia use the most non-renewable groundwater for agricultural production. The U.S. is one of the major exporters of food.
If the United States depletes its groundwater resources, that represents a risk to the whole global food system, because if you remove the exports, countries around the world will be impacted. Now, for example, China and India also face groundwater depletion within their own countries. Now, they don't export to the rest of the world, so they face more of a domestic shortfall if their groundwater aquifers are depleted.
But if China and India deplete groundwater used for domestic agriculture, they would have to rely more on food imports. Greater demand could cause global food prices to rise. Puma says some U.S. states are well aware of the pending depletion of some deep aquifers.
California recognizes they're facing groundwater depletion. Kansas, they also recognize they're facing groundwater depletion issues. Yet the solutions aren't clear. There's been attempts to slow down the use of the groundwater, but that's not solving the problem because we have a limited supply that's not going to be replenished.
One of the biggest aquifers in the United States is the nearly 282,000 square kilometer Ogallala Aquifer. It lies under parts of 8 states, including Kansas. A Kansas Geological Survey study done a few years ago estimated it could run dry under the state within 50 years. Most of the land is used for growing wheat, corn, and other staple crops. The NASA scientist says right now, it's just a matter of managing what's left.
To make true progress on this front, we have to have this discussion of how will we adjust our farms, our farming activities, to deal with a future where we're going to face a situation where groundwater will no longer be present in these locations.
What about large desalination projects that would convert seawater into freshwater for agricultural use? Puma says that would be extremely expensive, raising the cost of water for farmers and, in turn, the cost of food.
If they have to pay very high prices for their water, we would expect that the majority of farmers wouldn't be able to continue farming. So desalination would be very difficult to help solve this problem just because of pure expense.
So while many countries, like Somalia, are in the midst of drought, the NASA University of College London study warns there's a looming underground drought as well.
It's a really global issue. All countries around the world are facing this challenge. We don't have any great solutions or strategies to deal with this. So at the very least, we need to have discussions to come up with new ways, new strategies that recognize this problem and try and coordinate how we might adjust our policies.
Any strategy must balance the needs of short-term production with long-term sustainability. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up on 20 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. While UN humanitarian officials say fighting between security forces and militias is affecting well over 1.5 million people in the DRC's Kasai region. The fighting began after tensions arose last year between the Luba ethnic group and their provincial governor. The violence stretches across 5 provinces. Hundreds have been killed and nearly 434,000 people have been displaced. The UN says the ongoing violence is worsening tensions between communities seen as supporting the militias and those perceived as siding with government forces. Media reports say children are being used as soldiers. Arab and Egyptian media reacted mostly favorably to the reception given to Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi by U.S. President Donald Trump. Sisi's Islamist opponents either condemned the visit or ignored it completely. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Most Arab and Egyptian news channels broke into their newscasts to carry Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi's meeting with U.S. President Trump at the White House live, describing the talks between the two men as cordial and positive. Arab media underscored the theme of combating terrorism and Sisi's emphasis of the subject while meeting Trump. Received kudos. The Egyptian president stressed he was impressed by Mr. Trump's personality and his eagerness to tackle the issue of terrorism, which he termed a devilish and devious ideology that kills innocents and destroys peoples and security. University of Paris political science professor Khatar Abu Dieb tells VOA the Sisi visit to Washington represents a sea change in U.S. foreign policy toward the Arab world. He says the new Trump foreign policy marks the end of the regime change era and that a pragmatic interpretation of national interests has taken hold. Egypt, he argues, is at the forefront of those friendly nations fighting terrorism, so the United States has decided to support it. The popular Cairo daily Al Yom Asaba carried a photo showing the two presidents shaking hands while quoting Trump saying military cooperation between Egypt and the U.S. will be greater than at any time in the past. The United States gave Egypt $1.3 billion in aid last year. Egyptian TV underscored an offer Sisi made at the Arab summit last week to fight terrorism on an ideological level. Sisi says terrorism must be tackled on all levels, starting with a military response, then followed by efforts to improve the economic situation, along with an ideological battle using educational and religious institutions, including Egypt's venerable Al-Azhar University. Qatari-owned Al Jazeera TV, which supports Egypt's banned Muslim Brotherhood group, broadcast video of a small anti-Sisi demonstration in front of the White House. Egyptian TV, however, highlighted a pro-Sisi demonstration elsewhere in Washington with supporters chanting slogans in favor of Sisi and Trump. Egypt's banned Muslim Brotherhood organization did not mention the Sisi visit on its official English website, although Arab media quoted former Brotherhood official Amr Daraj as denouncing the visit. Many top leaders of the Brotherhood, which was ousted from power by the Egyptian military in July 2013, are serving jail sentences. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Thank you, Edward. During yesterday's meeting between President Trump and Egypt leader el-Sisi, no public mention was made of human rights. The previous Obama administration had been critical of the Egyptian government on that issue. Earlier, a senior White House official had said the administration would work quietly with Egypt to address human rights. Tom Malinowski, outgoing Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy and Human Rights, spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy about chances of pressuring Egypt for better respect of human rights.
I don't think President Trump has expressed much interest in supporting democracy and human rights anywhere in the world, including the United States, for that matter. But I think there are many, many Americans, including top leaders in our Congress, in other important institutions in the United States, that will be asking very, very tough questions about our aid to Egypt, whether we are getting our money's worth, whether Egypt is willing to be a true counterterrorism partner, which, you know, it has not been, at least in the fight against ISIS in Iraq and in Syria. I don't think that General Sisi is going to have quite as easy a time as he may think, simply because Donald Trump may be friendly to him.
You said Egypt carried out the worst strategy to combat terrorism using mass arrests of political activists on top of the most extreme terrorists. How would that make Egypt a major ally in combating terrorism?
I don't see Egypt as a major ally in combating terrorism. We have a shared interest with the Egyptian people. The Egyptian people have suffered more than almost any other people from terrorism over the years. But I think that the Egyptian government is more focused on combating its political opposition, including what remains of the Muslim Brotherhood and the liberal opposition in the country. It is more interested in using the rhetoric and legal structures of counterterrorism against those people than against the people who are actually killing Americans and killing Egyptians. And that is what needs to change.
Final question. How would you describe the current state of human rights and freedom in Egypt under President Sisi?
Well, I think it's about as bad as it has been at any point in modern Egyptian history, if you consider the number of people imprisoned for their political affiliations and actions. If you look at the epidemic of torture in Egyptian prisons, the situation in the Sinai, this is not a good time. And I think that makes it much more difficult for all of us, Egyptians and Americans, to be able to work together against the real threat that the two countries face, which is ISIS.
Tom Malinowski is outgoing Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy and Human Rights. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Take your peek, watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Against All Odds, a book written by Cameroonian lawyer Angela Kwemo. It's a practical guide to making the most of your God-given talents and using them to better yourself, your country, Africa, and the human race. That's all on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30. UTC.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.